A 23-year-old lieutenant steps off a helicopter into Vietnam's human air, physically prepared but mentally unprepared for what awaits. Within 16 days, Frederick Downs Jr. would command a platoon of men whose lives depended on his split-second decisions. Within 4 months, a buried mine would tear his body apart, ending his combat service but beginning a lifelong reckoning with war's true cost. The Killing Zone stands apart from other Vietnam narratives not because it offers grand strategic insights or political commentary, but because it refuses to look away from the intimate brutality of small unit combat. Tim O'Brien called it the finest account of small unit combat I've ever read, praise that carries weight precisely because it comes from someone who lived the same nightmare and spent decades trying to articulate it. Downs' first night in the field shattered any illusions officer training might have created. Automatic rifle fire whipped through the darkness as a Viet Cong fighter attacked a neighboring position, leaving two men severely wounded. The next day brought punji pits, sharpened bamboo stakes hidden in camouflaged holes, wait-a-minute vines that snagged equipment, and oppressive heat that transformed 70-pound packs into instruments of torture. Within days, he witnessed burning villages, survived sniper fire, and watched in surreal awe as an enemy fighter continued shooting at a jet even as napalm descended upon his position. This wasn't the sanitized warfare of training films. This was chaos with consequences measured in blood. Downs inherited 1st Platoon, Delta Company, with its unofficial motto, "It's a lick," the punishment received when things go wrong. His first major test came while guarding bridges on Highway 1, where static electricity from a thunderstorm detonated a claymore mine, severely wounding 3 men. In his panic, Downs gave incorrect medevac coordinates that would have placed them in the South China Sea. The lesson was brutal. Command failures have faces, names, and families waiting back home. The enemy rarely showed themselves. They struck through mines and booby traps, then vanished. Downs watched a truck hit a mine that demolished the cab, throwing the passenger 50 feet with his leg blown off while the driver died instantly. No enemy to fire at, just the grim task of collecting remains. This psychological burden weighed on every patrol, each step potentially triggering an explosion. The war's moral complexity revealed itself when, after shooting a troublesome village dog, Downs was invited to dinner by the chief, only to discover they were cooking the dog he'd killed. Despite his apprehension, he couldn't refuse without causing offense. November thrust the platoon into the Central Highlands jungle. Helicopters dropped them 20 kilometers west of Du Pho, soldiers jumping from 5 to 10 feet into elephant grass with 70-pound packs. They established a firebase on a ridge honeycombed with enemy tunnels, wrestling artillery guns into position. The jungle destroyed any notion of progress. A 500-meter ridge could consume an entire day. During breaks, Downs discovered blood-filled leeches on his body despite not crossing streams. By evening, they formed their defensive circle, 7 to 10 positions with 3 men each. The harsh reality was simple. They controlled only the ground they stood on. 2 hours into one patrol, the point man spotted an enemy soldier with a woman near camouflaged huts. After killing him, they discovered his bad foot, leading to dark jokes that he'd been left behind with her as his nurse, gallows humor that masked the psychological strain of killing. Separated from his radio man during a village sweep, Downs investigated a bunker and came under fire from an NVA soldier. His M16 jammed after 3 rounds. Forced to use a triangle bayonet from a dead enemy, he stabbed the soldier repeatedly in the throat until he died. Finding a family photo in the man's billfold, Downs briefly wondered about his life before throwing his belongings down a well and staggering back, shaken. There's a vast difference between firing at distant figures and feeling another human's life drain away beneath your hands. The war's moral quagmire deepened with each civilian encounter. In early January 1968, Downs spotted 7 Vietnamese approaching, 2 boys, 2 old men, and 3 middle-aged women. Caught between recognizing them as non-combatants and knowing they were in a free-fire zone, he called for surrender. When they scattered with surprising speed, he ordered his men to fire, killing six. Though grenades and ammunition in their packs confirmed they were supplying the Viet Cong, Downs called it the darkest of my career. Military strategy created frameworks where killing civilians could be justified as following orders, yet the human conscience isn't so easily overridden. Throughout these horrors, something unexpected emerged. Connections that transcended ordinary friendship. Downs' relationship with his radio operator, Mann, exemplified this bond. During a tense night on Hill 453, Mann showed Downs pictures of his wife and newborn son he'd never seen, expressing raw fear of dying before holding his child. When an explosion erupted, Downs handled the crisis, a probe that left three men wounded, then returned to find Mann crying in their foxhole. He comforted him until he regained composure, sharing stories of his own family and promises they'd both make it home. This vulnerability contradicts stereotypical notions of stoic masculinity. Constant proximity to death stripped away social pretenses, leaving raw human connection. These bonds often transcended racial and regional differences that might have divided the men in civilian life. When you're getting shot at, you don't care about the color of the hand passing you ammunition. These relationships became the emotional anchor that kept men functioning in an environment designed to break them. January 11, 1968, began with deceptive calm. Downs gathered his squad leaders for what seemed routine, a patrol through familiar territory. Breaking his strict protocol of rotating point squads daily, he kept the same squad up front. They weren't going far, and the point knew the way. This minor deviation would prove catastrophic. Approaching a village, they spotted a Viet Cong guerrilla vanishing into a tunnel. At 0745 hours, Downs' foot hit a pressure plate. The explosion severed his left arm above the elbow, mangled his right hand, and mutilated his body from the waist down. As he lay, holding his bloody stump skyward, his men formed a defensive perimeter while Doc administered morphine and a tourniquet. Despite fading strength, Downs maintained command, ordering his men to get the dink who planted that mine. At the second surgical hospital, a persistent nurse's repetitive questions, name, rank, serial number, kept him conscious. His heart stopped on the operating table. The war continued without him. 7 days later, his friend Bill Ordway triggered a booby-trapped grenade, suffering a fatal wound to his jugular. Within 2 weeks, the platoon lost 12 wounded and one killed, about half its strength. By February 10th, Delta Company requested evacuation for 22 wounded and 4 killed. Of the 4 second lieutenants who started with Delta Company, 2 had lost limbs and 1 was dead. 20 years later, Downs returned to Vietnam as part of a team sent by President Reagan. Walking around Hanoi's Lake of the Restored Sword, he saw a Vietnamese soldier with his young son, and something shifted. After 2 decades of hatred, he finally saw the Vietnamese as human beings. He met a Vietnamese veteran who had fought in the same area where he lost his arm. When Downs joked that perhaps this man had planted the mine, the veteran laughed and bought him a beer, saying it was better to drink together than kill each other. He gave Downs 3 small vases for his wife and daughters, a gesture of peace between former enemies. This transformation from hatred to reconciliation represents the journey many veterans have taken. The killing zone reminds us that war's true cost is measured in shattered bodies, haunted minds, and the lifelong work of making peace with what we've done and what's been done to us.